Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills have hired a former Patriots player as an offensive assistant, Ryan Wendell. He played center for the Patriots for 7 seasons, one game with the Carolina Panthers. He'll work alongside former Patriots assistant Brian Daboll here in Buffalo as an offensive assistant. Combine winding down in Indianapolis right now. We have our fastest time at the Combine today. Ole Miss safety Zedrick Woods ran a 4.29-second 40-yard dash today, passing Auburn cornerback Jamel Dean, who ran 4.3 earlier in the day for the best time at the event. Ohio State wide receiver Paris Campbell and UMass Andy Isabella, both wide receivers tied for third, running 4.31 respectively on Saturday. So the fastest time at the Combine, safety Zedrick Woods from Ole Miss. He ran 4.29 today. Around the NFL, Jadeveon Clowney is going to stay with the Houston Texans. NFL Network reports that the Texans have put the franchise tag on Jadeveon Clowney. When the NFL year begins next week, March 13th, Wednesday, the Jacksonville Jaguars are expected to sign free agent quarterback Nick Foles to a multi-year contract. Teams not allowed to talk deals with free agents until March 11th next Monday, and deals can be announced next Wednesday. The Jaguars ready to release quarterback Blake Bortles and install Foles as their starter. Jacksonville will have to pay $6.5 million of Bortles' 2019 salary. The Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce underwent ankle surgery, a cleanup surgery, it is said, according to NFL Network. Kelce expected to return for the start of training camp, even though he will miss some, if not all, of Kansas City's spring program. Injury for the Buffalo Sabres, an upper body injury, will force defenseman Jake McCabe to miss the next 5 to 6 weeks. The 25-year-old season is probably over. Suffered the injury in the second period of the 5-2 loss on Saturday night. McCabe's been around for parts of 6 seasons with the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres home tonight against Edmonton at KeyBank Center, 7 o'clock faceoff. And Hockey Hall of Famer Terrible Ted Lindsay passed away over the weekend. He was 93 years old. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker, our number 3 of One Bills Live. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, longtime NFL personnel expert, three-time Super Bowl winner, former NFL general manager. He is a writer, a contributing writer for TheAthletic.com, and he's written an outstanding book, Gridiron Genius. Michael Lombardi on the line with us. Michael, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker up here in Buffalo. I got to tell you, your book's the best football book I've read in several years. Outstanding work. Congratulations to you.
Oh, that's really nice of you to say, John. I appreciate that. Thank you. It was really a labor of love, and it was a book I hope that I paid the great respect to some of the greatest coaches of all time, being Walsh and Belichick.
Yeah, one guy early in the book you paid respect to also was Steve's former head coach here in Buffalo, Marv Levy. Not that he is in the league with those two, but he certainly deserves some respect, I guess, and you paid it to him.
You know, I think it was really, when you go back and I did this project for the Rams, which was so rewarding, and I talked about it in the book, you find that sometimes we define people based on situations that we really didn't understand. And I think when you look at Marv Levy's career in Kansas City, and obviously Bill Polian knew this, that he got fired in the strike year, and there was a lot of unrest, and it really had nothing to do with Marv's ability to coach. And I think that he got patented in a way to where it was unfair for him. And certainly Bill knew that, hired him, and it proved to be the correct hire. And I think that second-time coaches, we have this imagery of, oh, he's a retread. Well, look, there's no school you go to learn to become a head coach. You know, there's no place you can actually do unless you do the job. And sometimes retread is really the reinvigoration of a coach who learned from his mistakes.
Yeah, your book here that talks about all these great guys you've rubbed up against, all the way from Al Davis and Bill Belichick to others all the way down on. Talk a little bit about your book. It's not really about football as much as it is about management.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Walsh told me in 1984 we're only competing against 8 teams, and that was when there was only 28 in the league. And I thought he was crazy, and I realized he wasn't. You know, it's really about culture. I mean, Steve, you can speak to it. Hell, you had a great culture with Marv Levy. He built a culture there, you know. And, yes, Jim Kelly was a great player. And, yes, the K-Gun was revolutionary. And you had Bruce Smith, and you had a lot of good talent. But you all played together as a team. You don't come back from 35-3 at halftime to win a game if you don't play together as a team with a backup quarterback. So I've never been a part of a team that didn't like each other that went on to win. And I think a lot of the book, and I'm sure Buffalo fans can resonate with it, it comes from Herb Brooks, you know, the hockey team in 1980 that influenced Coach Walsh, that influenced Bill Belichick. Those guys playing together, playing as one, is more important than having just talent.
The book is Gridiron Genius, a Masterclass in Winning Championships and Building a Dynasty in the NFL. Author Michael Lombardi on the line with us. Michael, your first chapter, chapter one, the organization, culture beats everything. That resonates in Buffalo right now. Michael, if you got a minute, let me play you a quick soundbite from our current head coach, Sean McDermott, from early last October when the Bills were struggling kind of badly. And McDermott was asked, why do you focus so much on culture? Here's what he had to say.
I mean, we're trying to develop a culture here. The culture, to me, trumps strategy. And that's what I believe in wholeheartedly. And it doesn't mean we have choir boys. It means we've got guys that love football and do the things the right way for the most part.
Michael Lombardi, what do you think of that?
I've liked Sean since the first time I've heard him, since what I've seen, what they've done up there. The general manager being what they've been able to do in terms of, A, admitting mistakes, B, getting rid of players, that it was all about the player and not about the team, and putting the team first. And, I'm going to resonate to anybody like that. And I think last year when people were saying they had the worst team in football and they couldn't win a game, you just knew their culture was going to be strong and they were going to be able to endure. Now, they're not perfect, but they're building something that can last a long time, which is ultimately what we want to do. Those teams that win once every 4 or 5 years, and they have this great success, and then the next year they're right back to it, i.e. like the Arizona Cardinals. So I think I've always liked what Sean says. I've liked what he's preached. And more importantly, I liked how he's acted and behaved in terms of player personnel.
You know, fans might not want to hear this. In fact, some of the Bills fans last October didn't want to hear it. You got a quote from a management expert in the book on this topic who says, culture can eat strategy for lunch. I kind of believe that, Michael. I think that's true, and I think we're watching it play out here in Buffalo.
I do. I think, look, if you tell me the New England Patriots are the most talented team in the National Football League, you know, they've won 74 games, John and Steve. They've won 74 games in the last 5 years. And, yes, they have a great quarterback. And, yes, they have a great coach. But what they have is a great culture. The closest team to them in wins are the Pittsburgh Steelers at 57. The Browns have won 19. The 49ers have won 25. So you've got to develop a culture. What Belichick does every single day in that building is develop a culture. He maintains the culture. It's the same thing Coach Walsh did. And if your players don't want to play in the culture, it's like the Navy SEALs. Go on to somewhere else. You know, the one thing about Navy SEALs is anybody can join the SEALs, and anybody can make it through a week of the SEALs. But the reason there's so many helmets in the quad of Navy SEAL training is because they can't last for more than 6 weeks. They can't do it for 3 months. They can't do it consistently. Those are the champions. That's why it's a 20% ratio in the NFL. That's why it's a 20% ratio in SEAL training.
Yeah, culture does mean a lot in the NFL, and you can see teams like the Patriots who have done it year after year. There are other teams as well. The one I'm thinking of right now is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have been successful year after year after year. But now you see guys like Le'Veon Bell, guys like Antonio Brown. How is Mike Tomlin and this culture of the Steelers, how do they weather this and stay competitive? And what do you think, can you attribute this drama in Pittsburgh to?
Well, I think Mike Tomlin lost the culture. I think, you know, culture is a great word, right? It sounds really good, but it's something you have to work on every single day. And if you let it slip just a little bit, it starts to manifest itself and you lose it. That's what happened in Pittsburgh. They've won 57 games, only second to the Patriots 74 in the last 5 years. But the Rooney family gets culture. They understand it more than anyone. And so what they've done is they said, okay, we've had enough of Le'Veon Bell. We've had enough of Antonio Brown. They're hurting our culture. So they're gone. And we're going to replace him with somebody else. And you know what, Mike Tomlin? You got to rebuild this culture. We're going to give you this year to prove to us that you still can build a culture that can win. Because these 57 wins that we've had the last 5 years prove we can win. We got to get our culture back. And I think that's what they're doing, Steve. I think the reason they're getting rid of talent is to improve their culture.
We're on the line with Michael Lombardi, who is a three-time Super Bowl winner, the author of the book Gridiron Genius, about building culture, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building a dynasty in the NFL. That's the title. And Michael, Steve and I are just back from the combine, and basically we're in the team assembly portion of the offseason right now. There's a quote you attribute to Bill Belichick that sounds a lot like something I've heard Brandon Bean say. He said, we're not, and Belichick said it too, we're not collecting talent, we're building a team. There's an important distinction there, isn't there?
It really is. And, I mean, look, football's a game of 21 individuals working together, 22 individuals working together at all different times on the field. You know, you've got 11 on the side, and it isn't necessarily the guy that does it the best. It's the guy that consistently does it, who communicates, who puts the team first. I think we see it all. Look, you need talent to win. There's no doubt. But when you watch the Patriots last year win with that team, they lost to five teams that didn't make the playoffs. And they go to win the Super Bowl and beat the almighty Los Angeles Rams and hold that offense to 3 points with defensive players that most teams would say, you know what, that's probably not good enough for us. They did it because they have a unified team that plays together. That's the key to winning in any team sport. You got to play together. We've seen it with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Look, LeBron's the greatest basketball player in the history of sport, in the history of the game, maybe. And you see sometimes they struggle to win because it's about the team. It isn't about one.
Let's talk about some teams that are trying to build a culture, and they're starting from scratch this year. You got teams like the Jets, the Dolphins, the Cardinals, the Packers, the Bengals, the Browns, the Broncos, the Buccaneers, all these eight teams that have changed head coaches. Some of them have retread, and you said about retread, Adam Gase is going to be a retread within the division. Which one of those teams, and the one I'm kind of pointing to is John Elway's out there, who has won a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning at the end of his career, been to a couple of them. What teams are these eight here? Who's the furthest away and who's the closest to it?
That's a great question, Steve, because see what Buffalo has is Bean and McDermott work together. They're one. And some of these jobs, five of these jobs, the GM stayed. I mean, you know, was Lovie Smith and Dirk Cotter that bad that Jason Light stayed on as the general manager? He hired both. Lovie Smith hired Jason Light. He survived three coaches now. And yet he's still there. Steve Keim hired a coach. He fired a coach. This is where culture doesn't always work. Because unless the coach and the GM are unified together, hip to hip, employee to employee, working unison together. Look, I worked for Belichick in Cleveland for 6 years. It was his team. We worked together. He was the spokesman for the team. We worked side by side. Same thing when I worked with him in New England. You work side by side. It's got to be a one thing. And sometimes these teams that have changed are not unison. They're not in unison. They're not able to work together. But in Denver, John Elway's fired two coaches because he had Peyton Manning. He's won. But does he build the culture? Has he built the right culture to allow the coach to have some say? I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. I think when you look at this, Miami, with Brian Flores, certainly, he understands how to build this culture. But I do think there's this permeation that's going through the NFL when you look at Green Bay and you see Mark Murphy. I mean, I've been in the league a long time. I've never heard the Green Bay Packer president speaking. I've never heard the Green Bay Packer president going to the combine. I've never been aware of that in my life. But now it's here because Murphy is really the general manager of the team. When that starts to happen, you can't have culture.
Mike Lombardi's book is called Gridiron Genius. He's also a writer, writes regularly for TheAthletic.com. And he had a recent post about the combine, Mike. Steve and I just back from the scouting combine late last week. And your post is, what really goes on during the NFL combine? Tell us. I think we missed it last Wednesday through Friday. What did we miss?
Well, you missed. I mean, there's so much happening behind the scenes than it's actually on the field. Look, the numbers are great. We see DK Metcalf work out. We see all these great players work out. That's great. But there's so much going on behind the scenes. You know, you guys have been to the Prime, Moe's, where a lot of people are hanging out, talking. There's a lot of information changing hands. And then we heard maybe Nick Foles is headed to Buffalo. Those deals that get done, agents are out there selling players. Free agency starts on Madarian Street and Illinois Street in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Where do you think this is headed in the offseason now with this combine and the players that are going to be switching? Is it, you know, do teams start to position themselves in free agency with trade talks to get their guys signed or to sign other guys? Or what comes first? I know the thing on the front burner is the combine and evaluating the young guys, but they got to talk about the guys that are already in the league, don't they?
Absolutely, they do. And I think you got to be really concerned about your cap. I think partly, Steve, you know, from being a player, you bring somebody in who's never played for you and you pay him the most money of anybody else, you got to be able to stand in front of the team and justify it. Look at Jacksonville last year. You know, they have all these players down that they paid money to. They're not getting the same out of them. It affects your locker room. The one thing I've learned in my life is players respect knowledge and they respect your honesty. And if you're honest about what your actions are, when you bring a player into your locker room and you make him the highest paid player, he better play really well or else you're going to lose your credibility.
You know, and you speak about honesty and being realistic with yourself. One part of your book that I really enjoyed, Mike, it resonated with me when you talked about how you hate when teams double down on their mistakes, make a bad draft pick and just stay with them because, well, it's our pick. We got to stay with them. We're stuck with them. That's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, you've got to look. The greatest leaders of all time admit that they make mistakes and move on. Look, I've sat next to Belichick and I've heard him many times say, look, that I blew it. I made that mistake. And he goes back over it. Look, we're in the information business in the NFL. We collect data. And if you're not going through and sorting the data, understanding the data, and admitting what data was wrong and not what to collect, you're never going to get better. That's why you're only competing against eight teams, because most of the teams in the league refuse to look at themselves as part of the problem. And this is where Walsh had such a great advantage. He always wanted to look at the mistakes. How can we get better at what we're doing? What can we do? It's not, as I told my two boys growing up, I'm not criticizing you, I'm coaching you. It's the same thing when you're talking about the front office.
So you got these teams that are out there that are trying to put together a great culture, and then you've got one of the great players in the NFL who's out, and all of a sudden, you don't know if you've got a culture that you want him to be a part of. Antonio Brown is not helping himself at all with his words and with his actions at the end of the season. How does it end for Antonio Brown, and where does it end?
You know, I think I wish he could, you know, his agent should just tell him to shut up. Like,
right.
He's killing him.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, shut up, okay? That's enough. Like, nobody wants to hear your problems. You're about $24.5 million coming in the next 2 years. You can opt out. Look, you're a great player. You've made 800 catches in the NFL. You've got 74, 78 touchdowns. You know, you're a remarkable player, but shut up. It's enough. You got to be a team player. Nobody wants to have a prima donna on their team. Nobody in the NFL that I've been aware of is into buying other teams' problems. They don't want to do that. And I think if he goes somewhere else, you're going to have to handle this player, because if you win the game and he only catches two passes, you're going to have to hear it from him.
Yeah. Mike, what's the modern-day best practices approach to free agency? The Bills have some money to spend in the next, March 13th, next week, right? Yeah, free agency
right.
Next week.
Right.
What's the best approach, you think, for a team like Buffalo as they get into free agency?
I would say this. I would measure twice, cut once. Follow the old carpenter's rule. Measure twice, cut once. I would be very careful about overpaying for players, because one thing I've learned in the NFL, there's replaceable parts and there's non-replaceable parts. And what's gotten you in trouble, me included, because I've made this mistake, is when you overpay for a replaceable part. You've got to use you got to use 365 days to improve your team, and there's no player other than the top echelon player that if you don't get them, your team falls apart. You've got to be diligent and work hard to try to keep procuring talent on a daily basis. So I would stay patient. I would wait till the bottom of the market starts to come through, and I would try to add pieces that fit within the culture I'm working on and build the team inside out.
Hey, Mike, I want to help you sell books in Buffalo. Your book is Gridiron Genius, but here's the issue. There's so much good stuff about Belichick that Bills fans might not respond to this. How can you let Bills fans know that it's not all about Belichick is great?
Well, they got if you want to know about Brian Daboll, your offensive coordinator, I worked with Brian for 2 years there. You know, Brian knows Brian started a lot of this when he was a GA at Michigan State, and he ended up coming to New England, and he got Josh McDaniels hired. And that whole system of how they developed coaches in New England started in Cleveland. So if you're a Buffalo Bills fan and you hate the Patriots, read this book as if it was really happening in Cleveland, because in all honesty, had Art Modell not moved the team, it would have happened in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a good point.
It's a really good book, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike Lombardi is author of the book Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building a dynasty in the NFL. Three-time Super Bowl winner, former NFL general manager, writes for TheAthletic.com. It's a really good book,
it's
Steve.
Great insight into handling people and how great coaches are great managers of people, and some of the things that they all have in common. And it's pretty insightful. It's an interesting read. I've read all of it, but I read a good chunk of it, and it is worth your time.
You know how every year when the regular season ends and teams are in the market to hire coaches, certainly the Bills have been there a lot over the years, and you think to yourselves, what goes into that process and what should they ask? In the middle of Mike Lombardi's book, there's basically a reprint of essentially a handbook that he developed when he was working for Bill Walsh, I think, filled with questions. No, maybe it was with the Browns. Questions for coaches. What do you ask a potential head coach? And it's fantastic. It's like 20 pages of a handbook that you would have at your disposal. This is what I'm going to ask, including, you know, how long are you going to practice and what do you want to do with training camp and what do you do the night before the game and when is your meeting time? I mean, just amazing detailed questions that all laid out. For someone who is in the process of interviewing head coaches, it's the book is filled with details like that.
Right,
it's
and,
great.
And listen, the devil is in the details. You get into this situation where you're running an NFL team and you've never done it before. The details are what bogs you down, and they also save you when it becomes crunch time and when the chips are down. And the details that you take care of in the times when there's no pressure are the ones that save you when the pressure is on. And that's what these guys do. I mean, these guys like Sean McDermott, Bill Belichick, all of these coaches, all the way down the line, all the great ones from Bill Walsh and John Madden, Bill Parcells, all of them, they'll tell you the same thing about all of them. They're all very organized, very detail-centered, and they manage their people extremely well. And the way they do it and some of the things they said and did to their teams, to their coaching staffs, they're legendary and brilliant in their conception and the way they affect their people.
I was only half kidding when I asked Mike at the end there about how do you make this book appeal to Bills fans, because it is. There's a lot about Belichick, a lot about Bill Walsh. But two things that resonated with me reading the book the last week or so, two things that I think are either in place here or starting to be in place. And that's building a team, and the quote that he attributes to Belichick, we're not collecting talent, we're building a team, and there's a distinction. I know I've heard Brandon Bean say that, and Sean McDermott.
I think Brandon Bean said that as soon as they hired him. Yeah. That was one of the first things he said publicly. He says, we're not here to assemble talent. And that's when he was trying to defend, you know, Marcel Darius and Sammy Watkins and Ron Darby and those guys who they were shown the door. We're not here about assembling talent. We're here about putting together a team, and people were up in arms over it when all those guys were out. But now the upswing has come, and people are like, okay, well, at least I'll listen.
Yeah. You know? And some fans were up in arms last October on a typical Wednesday news conference when Sean McDermott said something along the lines of culture trumps strategy, and people are like, what? What's he talking about? Chapter one of Mike Lombardi's book, Culture Beats Everything. He believes that. It sounds like Bill Walsh believed that. Sounds like Bill Belichick believes that. I'm beginning to believe that, too. Culture is more important than strategy, and maybe not more important than personnel. Personnel is important, the right personnel, but culture is key.
Culture is everything because it includes strategy. It includes personnel. It includes the coaching staff, your support staff, your equipment staff, your medical staff. Culture includes the entire building. Strategy is just one part of what one part of your organization does, the coaching staff and your players. Culture is about... And there's a great analogy in the book. He said, listen, your football team is like a new car. It only works and it's only what it is because everybody along the assembly line tightened every screw and did everything and put every nut and bolt and part and piece of that car together properly along the way. When you get the car, it runs good because your culture put it together. That's what your football team is. And there's a million moving parts on a Sunday afternoon. You got to have everybody putting them together in just the right way.
It's a solid book. Mike Lombardi joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants. Proud to be locally owned and operated. His book, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass at winning championships and building a dynasty in the NFL. Steve and I coming back with more. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Steve Tasker, back at the old ranch, the old One Hills Live Ranch, One Buffalo Studio, right next door to the stadium. Looks like an ice rink. They could play. They could play hockey in there. Steve.
It's kind of a beautiful little mosaic there on the floor of the stadium. There.
Edmonton, Buffalo tonight. Move the game out here.
It looks great.
There'll be room for everybody.
Grey Cup action.
Anyway, it is a wintry day here in Archer Park, but Steve and I are good with it and good with the show. Really good with Mike Lombardi. We thank him for joining us. If you missed Mike Lombardi or earlier John Ledyard, it'll be up on our website, BuffaloBills.com, a little bit. We spent a lot of time on the combine today, and we want to hear your thoughts on the combine. In particular, which weekend combine performance do you think should intrigue the Buffalo Bills the most? Which one intrigued you the most? On our Twitter poll, it's pretty evident that people loved what they saw from the wide receiver from Mississippi, DK Metcalf. 67% of our respondents say that is the performance that should intrigue the Bills the most. 1,000 votes in so far. 13%. Only 13 say the big man, Quinnen Williams, defensive tackle from Alabama, should intrigue the Bills the most. 11% say Montez Sweat, Mississippi State edge rusher. Look, we're missing guys, too, if you have somebody else in mind.
Yeah.
Other gets 8% of the vote. But give us a call, and we'll discuss. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And we have some responses on the tweet sheet as
well. Yeah, the tweet sheet comes from Trenton Johnson. My only concern about DK is staying healthy, but when I put him with Josh, Zay, Robert, and Jason, I see defenses getting their tops blown off because of the play of all of them together. In 11 personnel, Josh will be the king of the pros, and Brian Daboll's play calling will be sadistic. There's some
sadistic
whoa,
play calling.
Whoa, baby. There's somebody that's down the road a little ways right there in Trenton Johnson. And I get it. I mean, you can see all that speed and all that athleticism with an arm like Josh Allen's and his ability to run and break contain. It's pretty fun. Pretty fun to think about. We'll see. We'll see.
Daryl F29 tweets this in on the tweet sheet. A defensive end Brian Burns, Florida State, had a huge day yesterday. And wide receiver Miles Boykin, Notre Dame, really raised my eyebrows. He says, the Bills need pass rush, and Burns tested well, had college production to match. Boykin ran a 4.42 40. Also had good cone numbers and vertical. He's 6'4", 220 pounds, by the way. I got to go back. I missed Boykin on Saturday. I got to go back. I like the numbers, but I don't recall watching him work out. I'm going to go back and see what it looked like for Miles Boykin, Notre Dame wide receiver, the second caller or tweeter on this show who has mentioned his name. So I'm going to go back and see what I missed.
Yeah. There's a lot of these guys that pop out of the woodwork. Then, of course, he's in Notre Dame, so he didn't really pop out of the woodwork. But to have a guy come out and put numbers like that, and the three-cone thing is interesting because it is about lateral movement, changing direction, and being an athlete on your feet, moving around in tight spaces, which is what football is a lot of it. Three-cone drill is really important, and that's why everybody was like, wow, DK Metcalf didn't do very well in that drill. It says something about his athleticism aside from being fast. So there's going to be more of this coming out. They're going to have – the Notre Dame's going to have their pro day coming up. This guy's going to have to show it there as well. So it's going to be fun to watch these guys evolve because, Murph, I'll just warn you right now, I'm going to talk myself in and out of guys all the way down to the draft. So
why would anything change?
Stay with me. Stay with me.
I think you, about an hour ago you –
Miles Boykin.
An hour ago you ruled out DK Metcalf. Is he back in your list of potential Bills picks right now?
No, I like Miles Boykin better now because of his three-cone drill.
I am warned. I am forewarned.
But DK Metcalf's on the back burner.
A tweet from Eric Osterreicher. We seem to be so good on defense. Nevertheless, do you want to pass on Sweat if available? McDermott talks about building the future through drafts. Sweat is one for the future, if not soon.
Yeah, but here's the thing about Sweat, and I get it. But when you're talking about the edge rushers, Sweat's like down the list. I mean, you got guys like Nick Bosa, Brian Burns, Josh Allen, Clelin Ferrell. You know, you've got some guys there that can really go. Montez is like, you know, down the list. So if you get Josh Allen or this Brian Burns or Nick Bosa, what if they're available? Now, Nick Bosa could be the first pick of the draft or certainly the second or third. But what if they fall? You know, what if you can get a shot at Josh Allen, the kid out of Kentucky? What if you can get a shot at Rashawn Gary out of Michigan? And then there's some other guys that have really, you know, jumped up too. So, yeah, Montez Sweat is a pretty good player, and he tested out really well. There are guys that are thought more highly of than him. Yep. He's just kind of the flavor of the day, you know. So we'll see. I mean, what happens if you can get a chance at some of those guys that are above him or right there around him? And Brian Burns had a very good day yesterday, the Florida State junior. So it might just you might be able to get Montez Sweat late in the first if you trade sideways or down. So we'll see.
We'll see. Call here from Tim in Batavia. Hello, Tim. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi.
Doing well.
Well.
What do you think about that kid at Oliver? I mean, I know he had some run-ins with his coach and stuff, but, boy, they were comparing him to Aaron Donald from the Rams.
Yeah.
Kid looked pretty like a really good player. I mean, I know he got a bit of a hothead, but I'm not saying he's worth the ninth pick, but if he fell, if the Bills traded back, that's a pretty nice-looking young player.
Yeah, he is, and I was just going to say to you, I don't know if the value is there in ninth overall, but somewhere in the first round for him, right? For sure somewhere in the first round. questions, I think, a couple of minor questions about behavior and stuff, but I think he's a good player. I think he's a good player.
And he's,
first rounder for sure.
He's a little short. He's 6'2", but you know, most of those guys are right in that range. That's, you know, Aaron Donald isn't a giant guy like that, so it's all about their athleticism and their skills down inside. But certainly Ed Oliver might be there at number nine, because you start talking about teams ahead of the Buffalo Bills. There's only a couple that need a quarterback, and all the needs that these other teams have ahead of the Bills don't really center around the same things that the Buffalo Bills are looking for. I'm still an offensive line guy. I'm going to keep going back to it. There may be a really dominant offensive lineman available, and man, oh man, wouldn't you sleep better at night knowing the Bills got a guy like that?
Let's get to NFL True and False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. True, false. Steve and I entertained a couple of NFL notes and sort of bat it around and figure if it's true or if it's baloney. The Sky Judge proposal, we see that in the Alliance of American Football. Now, Steve has specialized in Alliance news the last couple of weeks, a month in. You've watched the game every week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Sky Judge proposal is one the NFL needs to embrace. Sky Judge is the super ref, right, who controls things from up top.
Right, and he can jump in on it. I think one of the things that will happen is, and I like the idea of having a guy there, because here's what happens. You can The slippery slope is this. If you're going to let them review everything, have a guy there who says, hey, wait a minute, you forgot something, or we're going to do this. There has to be some form of parameters what he can't cross. The problem is this. Say there's a quick pass, like the quarterback drops back, takes a hitch step, and he throws the ball down the left sideline. It's a touchdown and all of that. Well, then the super official can say, hey, you got a running, you've got, or let's say this, it's intercepted long down the sideline that goes all the way back for a touchdown. Well, the Sky official can come down and say, oh, by the way, the receiver on the right side got dragged down. It was an egregious penalty that they missed. Does he come in, jump in, and take the interception off the field for a play, the egregious penalty away from the ball? I don't know that you do that.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to tell the Sky Judge, say, listen, it's got to be on the ball. It's got to be where the ball is. I don't want you parachuting in and calling the left tackle for being too far off the line of scrimmage on the pre-snap penalty. You know, we don't need that. But if it's on the ball, in the play, at the critical moment of impact for the football or for the play or for the goal line or for possession or all that, yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
So
I say true.
Steve says true. Sky Judge proposal is one the NFL needs to embrace. I'll say false. How'd you know I was going to say
false?
I know.
Come on, man.
We got enough officials. We got enough rules. We got enough video. I think there's a value and a benefit to fans to be able to see the man making the call. I don't even like going to New York for the replay review. See the guy on the field making the call. Kill the umpire. Go ahead and yell it. You know, kill the referee. Go ahead and yell it, because he's right there. He can hear you. But if it's a Sky Judge, if it's a super official up top who you never see, you don't know, and you're not quite sure where this call's coming from, I don't think that'd be beneficial for fans.
I think what they should do is just review every play and make sure they get it right on possession and scoring plays and that kind of thing. And
we'll set aside 8 hours for today's NFL.
And just say, hey, boom, you missed it. Here's the play. Do it, and then they fix it on the field. Don't let the coaches challenge it. Don't let anybody challenge it. The guy upstairs will watch it. If it's close, he'll look at it, and he's got like 15 seconds to do it. And if he can do it in 15 seconds, slow motion, okay, let's do it. Otherwise, just shut up and let's keep playing.
I like that part. Shut up and keep playing. Keep it simple. I disagree with you, Steve. True and false. All right, how about this one? You mad that I disagreed?
No,
you look upset. You're already on to number two.
You'd be upset more than how little I care that you disagree.
I'm not even going
to
listen
to
your responses
anymore. You're supposed to disagree with me.
NFL true or false, the Jaguars are the best team for quarterback Nick Foles. I guess. I'll go true. Yeah, let me go false. I'm sorry to do that to the guys in the control room. The Eagles were the best team for quarterback Nick Foles. They happen to have Carson Wentz also, but he won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. The Eagles are the best team for Nick Foles, not the Jaguars. He will do little for the Jaguars, and they will do less for him. I don't see this ending well for Nick Foles or the Jaguars or Tom Coughlin or Doug Marrone or that entire group down there. Just not a big fan. I'm going false.
I'm
going
to say false, too, just because I think Jacksonville's got too many issues that don't have anything to do with the quarterback. Certainly they had quarterback issues. Blake Bortles wasn't a good player for them, and they invested a lot in him, tried to build a team around him, and they did. They built a great team around him, but they're getting to Nick Foles and a new quarterback about 3 years too late. So I'll say false as well.
Okay, and finally, NFL true or false.
So there we agreed.
Yes.
Does that make you feel better?
I didn't pay attention.
Oh, sorry.
Finally, you told me not to pay attention anymore.
I didn't tell you not to pay attention.
You told me you weren't paying attention to me. So
that was a retaliation for me not caring whether you agreed with me.
That's where I am. Right. NFL true or false part three. This is an interesting one. I might listen to you on this. Josh Rosen is worth more than a third-round pick. Over the weekend, our buddy Kimberly Jones, NFL Network, reports that, quote, people are beginning to believe almost universally that Kyler Murray will be the number one pick by the Cardinals. In fact, teams picking in the top 10 believe they'll have no chance of drafting Murray. So if that happens, the Cardinals give up on Josh Rosen after one season. Now, Arizona used a first-rounder to get Josh Rosen last year. They also gave up third- and fifth-round picks to Oakland to move up from 15 to 10 to get Josh Rosen. They put a lot, the Cardinals did last year, into drafting Josh Rosen. They're ready to give him up now after 1 year so they can get Kyler Murray. One general manager told Peter King of NBC that the cost to get Josh Rosen now is probably a three, not what the Cardinals think his value is, probably a third-round pick. Josh Rosen is worth more than a third-round pick, true or false? You want to go first, Steve?
Yeah, I'll say false. Ross Rosen is worth more than a third-round pick. I say true. Yeah. I think he is worth more than a third-round pick. If they move on from him, if Cliff Kingsbury goes in there, kicks Josh Rosen to the curb, brings Kyler Murray in, and starts running that the college offense that they ran at Oklahoma or Oklahoma State or wherever, and Cliff Kingsbury's whatever they call it. They have a name for his offense, and I can't think of what
air
it is.
Raid.
Air raid. They run this air raid offense, and it doesn't work. Look, you got a pro-style quarterback in Josh Rosen who was on a bad team, and I don't know what your expectations for him were. And I wasn't at practice every day. I didn't see him, and maybe they're down on him. Maybe they know things about him or found things out about him. I'm sure there are things they found out about him. But whether they're positive or negative, whether they don't think it's ever going to be there for Josh Rosen, that remains to be seen. But if they move on from him and get Kyler Murray in there and start running this air raid thing and it doesn't work, and Arizona Cardinals kicked a first-round quarterback to the curb who runs pro-style, and he goes someplace else and gets a better opportunity on a better team, that's a huge mistake. You can't kick a first-round quarterback to the curb after the year they had last year just because you want to run some different kind of offense. I think that's crazy talk.
I think he is worth more than a third-rounder. I think that's true as well. And just thinking back to our discussion with Mike Lombardi a couple of minutes ago about moving on from your mistakes. If you draft a guy who's a bust, don't be afraid to toss him to the curb. Look, Josh Rosen is not a bust. If he were awful last year, which, by the way, I don't know how you can declare a guy a bust after one season. You cannot, I don't believe.
Especially on that team.
Yeah, it was an awful team, and he didn't play well. But you gave up a third-rounder, a fifth-rounder to move up five spots. You used a first-rounder on him, and after one season, you're moving on, as Steve said, just because you want to change your offense because you got a new coach. That's foolish.
Now, listen, there's some people inside that building who obviously think it wasn't Josh Rosen's fault because they fired the head coach after 1 year. So you tell me you're going to lay that at the feet of a rookie quarterback, trade him because your team was so dysfunctional a year ago under 1 year head coach that you fired. I mean, that's crazy. Listen, I mean, they don't win. And Mike Lombardi said it. Their culture has been one of quick react and overreact all through their history, and they continue to do that. So if they do take Kyler Murray and do trade Josh Rosen, it's just more of the same from the Cardinals, and that's why Larry Fitzgerald's career has, except for him personally, his career's been a bust. I mean, he's been on a bad team for more years than he's been on a good one. It's because of their culture.
You want to put that on true or false? Larry Fitzgerald's career is a bust? I don't know if I want to do
no,
that.
No, a waste. I mean, as a team, I mean, he was on a bad team forever.
They went to a Super Bowl. They played in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Right. And, they managed to catch lightning in a bottle 1 year with Ken Whisenhunt. And they did a nice job. They were pretty good. But why? So where are they now? Why didn't they keep it?
Right. I don't know if his career is a bust, but that's for another day.
That's not the point I was trying to make.
But you threw it in there.
All right.
NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Steve and I coming back to disagree some more. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Okay, time now for What Have We Learned from Today's Show, presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What did we learn today? Let me fire it up here. What did we have on the show? Oh, John Ledyard from the Draft Network joined us in the 1 o'clock hour. He had a lot to say about the combine. We asked him about Quinnen Williams, Alabama defensive tackle, had a really good, solid combine. Is there a possibility he might slide down to where the Bills are, number 9 in the first round? Here's what John Ledyard said.
I think that Quinnen Williams helps to do that. I don't know exactly what team has been evaluating us given the current roster setup of the teams ahead of the Bills right now, but I really think that it could be a slide for him, and he's a way better player than Leonard Williams was on tape. And you remember when Leonard Williams played at 1-6, and people thought he was going to go number 1 or be the best player in the draft, and he slid down to number 6. So, I mean, I don't think a slide like that for Quinnen Williams is out of the question given the assortment of teams that are above Buffalo in the top of the draft. But if it does, I mean, there shouldn't be any hesitation. I mean, he is an elite player in a class that doesn't have a ton of elite players, and I think that his tape reflects that, his testing reflects that, and I think he'll absolutely be dominant in the NFL.
John Ledyard was great, and he has got a good website, NFL, what's it called?
The Draft Network.
Draft Network, yeah, draftnetwork.com.
NFL Draft Network.
Also on the show today, Michael Lombardi, the author of the book Gridiron Genius, and we talked to him about the focus on culture and the culture that Sean McDermott is trying to build here in Buffalo.
You know, I've liked Sean since the first time I've heard him, since what I've seen, what they've done up there, the general manager being what they've been able to do in terms of, A, admitting mistakes, B, getting rid of players, that it was all about the player and not about the team, and putting the team first. And, I'm going to resonate to anybody like that. And I think last year when people were saying they had the worst team in football and they couldn't win a game, you just knew their culture was going to be strong and they were going to be able to endure. Now, they're not perfect, but they're building something that can last a long time, which is ultimately what we want to do. I think I've always liked what Sean says. I've liked what he's preached. And more importantly, I liked how he's acted and behaved in terms of player personnel.
There you go. Mike Lombardi, his book is Gridiron Genius. Steve, I don't miss the combine, but I'm glad we went. I feel like I got a lot out of it this year.
I'm glad. Me too. I got besides that 5 pounds that I put on. Yeah, it was fun to be there, and it was fun to get the atmosphere of it. It's an event. I mean, there's no question about it. The NFL never does anything halfway, and it's over the top. I do want to go sometime and sit in the stands and watch these guys.
Yeah.
And be able to lay eyes on them and watch the things I want to watch instead of what the camera TV lets me watch.
Hey, we've got another show coming up tomorrow at noon. Our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Karges, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. We will see you tomorrow, noon to 3, right here. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.